As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter.
Today we talked with Ruben Gomez, founder of BidSketch. He shared with us how he was able to leverage integrations with other apps into promotional opportunities that fueled BidSketch's early growth. Check it out.
So we're here with Ruben Gomez of BidSketch. Ruben, why don't you tell us a bit about what it was like starting off? Were you working full-time? When did you decide to start BidSketch, and what did that look like?
Hi, yeah. So when I started BidSketch, I was working full time already. So I started it on the side. Basically, I was working nights and weekends to build it out. And then after I launched it, I think I was working still nights and weekends for about a year and a half before I was earning enough to where I could quit my job and basically could replace most of my salary.
So what did those days look like for you when you were doing for that kind of year and a half?
So generally, Monday through Friday, I'd get home, spend a couple of hours with my wife. And then about 8 o'clock or so, I'd start working until maybe midnight. So sometimes I'd get started a little bit later, nine, till one or something like that. I would try to put in about three, 3 or 4 hours at night. And generally, I'd put in a few hours on Saturday and not sometimes on Sunday, but not too much.
And was it only you building the product at first?
So initially, it was only me. I was building it in the very first version of it. I was building it in something called Grails and Groovy. So Grails was like a Java-based framework or a Groovy-based framework, and both of those were Java. And eventually, I learned that it's going to be a little bit difficult for me to find help because these weren't so mainstream languages and frameworks, right? Not like Ruby on Rails or, you know, Django or something like that. So I eventually changed to have it be Rails. And at that point, I was still working those same types of hours, but I started to outsource a little bit. So I started to get some help on the development side as well.
So during that first year and a half, at what point did you launch the product and start selling it?
So I worked about, trying to think of the timeline, so I worked for a few months on that first version, and then I scrapped everything, right? And then I worked for about 4 months after I started over again and was outsourcing everything. Not everything, but a lot of the development. So from that point to about 4 months later, I got to launch. And so it was a year and a half after I launched.
Okay.
That it was earning enough for me to quit my job.
Since you were working full time, where did the idea for BidSketch come from? Since it's you know, based around client proposals. Did this come from something at your full-time job?
It was actually somebody at my full-time job who, I guess they'd been asked to write a web app or something like that. I don't remember the details of the project, but, so he was going to meet with somebody to talk about this project, and he had never done work on the side, right? He hadn't done any contracting consulting or freelancing. So he was asking me about that because I'd done a bit of that. So I was explaining to him, you know, how the initial meeting, what he'd probably want to bring, and the proposal came up. And that's sort of when I went online to try and download a template and came across another Word plugin, I think, that did that. But I couldn't find a web app. So at that point, I was interested in products, and I thought, well, this might be a pretty good opportunity. I went to the Google keyword tool to search to see if anybody was looking for a web app that did that. Nobody was, but people were searching for proposal templates, which I thought was close enough. And that's sort of when I built the app or decided to build the app.
Sure, nice. And then what was the initial growth like for you? You know, it took a year and a half to get there. Were you ever at a point where you were like, you weren't sure that this was going to be it, or did you always know and you just kept working on it?
There were a lot of points where I almost gave up, or, you know, I was just having a lot of trouble. Like from way in the beginning before I even launched, right, when I was building it, and right after I launched. So the launch was pretty good. Before I had like a pre-launch to just people that were on my list, and it wasn't public at that point. So by the time it went public, I had, I think it was like just over 20 paying customers. And so that was looking pretty good. But, you know, that was discounted, and I'd launched to people on my list and all that stuff. And then after I moved it up to full price, which was super cheap, especially compared to what I charge now, nobody was paying. Nobody was signing up to a paid plan. You know, I was getting maybe one person a week, and this went on for a month. And like every day I was trying new things to try and get customers. And, you know, I was seriously, you know, asking myself whether I could actually make this work.
You did say you sold BidSketch early on. Were those customers that you're regularly talking to, were they beta users that were just kind of in the product and you offered them a discount? What did that relationship look like?
Sure. So early on, the people in the beta actually, let's see, right. So I had a very small group, like five or six people that I handpicked, and they were from my email list. At one point, I asked, I emailed my list and asked them, said I was looking for a few people to help beta test it. So the people that responded to the first few people that would respond, I'd give them access, and except that they would really need to test certain agree to test certain features and give feedback about that. So just setting that upfront expectation and sort of making it a very small group made it really easy for me to actually get people that will use the product, but also give feedback and, you know, be willing to jump on a call with me and all that stuff. Instead of like whenever a lot of people do a beta, they just do it to a big group and, you know, most of those people don't use it or say anything about it, right?
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
Yeah, so what did you do to get them to pay at the end? Was that a conversation that you had, or was it just a mechanic that you put into the app?
No, it was just something that was part of the app. But those five, they actually got a free lifetime account. So, okay. But the next group after that, they were just like anybody else. They paid.
Right.
So one of the things I've heard you mention in the past that was something that really helped you grow is the integrations that you've done with other apps out there. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you kind of started to get going with those integrations in the process that you've developed?
Sure. So the very first integration that I completed, I think, was FreshBooks. That was the first one. And basically, I worked on that one first because by far that was like the number one most suggested integration by customers at that point. So I actually got in touch with somebody in FreshBooks who handled integrations. And actually, at that point, I didn't really have like a strategy or any specific approach. I was just like learning about them. So I wanted to see if, I don't remember why I got in touch with them. I think it was more technical than anything. So they actually got on, this person got, I don't think they do this anymore, but this person got on the phone with me and we were talking it through and all that. And while I was on the phone, I asked him about like on the promotional side, what do they do? And he had mentioned that sometimes they might mention it on the newsletter. They have an add-ons page and all that stuff. So it sounded pretty good. So I went ahead and just built it out. And it was actually, I'm trying to think. I don't remember the timeline, but it was maybe about a month later or so that they mentioned it in the newsletter. And this was an email that went out to, you know, the millions of users and tons of, I don't know how many paying customers. But in that day, I got maybe close to, actually within the first few hours, it was like almost a month's worth of signups. So that I got. So
wow, that's amazing.
It was a lot of volume. I actually thought that somebody hacked my server because, you know, it's like, this has to be automated. So at that point is when I realized that, wow, okay, this can be super powerful, right?
So how did you go about approaching them in the first place, and what kind of value prop did you show up with? Because at that point, it sounds like you were pretty small and they were willing to share your product with their huge audience.
So with them, I actually, when I was done, or initially when I was talking to that first person about the integration, I was telling him about what type of integration that I was working on, which was deeper than a lot of the other integrations that they had. So I think that was one thing that they kind of liked about it. To start with, it wasn't just like import your contacts. It was actually convert a proposal into a FreshBooks invoice, you know, and a few other things that went deeper than some of the other integrations that they had. That was the first thing. The other thing was that after I was done, I actually created a video, and I created a nice landing page and all that stuff. And then I emailed them and let them know that I did all this, and that also I was going to email my my list just to announce the integration and stuff.
And since then, has that page driven organic traffic to you, with people searching like, how do I connect FreshBooks to proposals? Is that a source?
Yeah, organically, it does okay. It's not that big of a deal. What's better is basically the traffic that comes from their add-ons page, which isn't a lot, but it converts at a really high rate. So that traffic goes to that landing page, and then from there, they convert pretty well.
When you're approaching these integrations, are you asking them to do any work on their side, or are you kind of bearing that burden?
No, I just use their API. So the whole, especially when you're reaching out to anybody, whether it's an integration or, you know, cross promotional deal or anything, it's the best thing you could do is just to make it as easy as possible for them to promote you, right? Like, don't add any work at all, like, if you can. So I do all the technical work. I set up, like, I create a landing page and all that stuff. And I will reach out actually before I work on an integration. I always try to reach out to somebody in the company, and often, like, FreshBooks was big enough to where they had like a dedicated person or somebody who just did that. Often it's somebody in biz dev or marketing that I end up talking to. For instance, with Right Signature, I did that. I reached out to them. My customers were asking about it. So I reached out to them and I ended up speaking with their biz dev person. We got to talking and, you know, everything sounded pretty good. And then I asked them how they went about promoting their integrations. And he said that, I think he said something like they can put it on the blog or something, which often times isn't going to do much if you're talking about a product blog. Right. Most product blogs aren't that good. They don't get that much traffic. And, you know, so I asked him if they had a newsletter. He said yes. And I said, would you announce it on the newsletter? And he said, oh, we don't usually do that. I said, OK, I tend to work on the integrations that help me promote them first. So I'll probably hold off on this for a few months and, you know, we'll probably do another integration with you know, a different electronic signature vendor first. So then he said, well, let me talk to the owner. Let's see what we can do. So he went back and he talked to them and he said, yeah, sure. He was good with announcing it as long as you announce it. You know, I said, yeah, that was full, you know, what I intended to do. And then they would tweet it and do a blog post and all that stuff. So generally I try to, you know, have something in place before I actually start doing the work.
And you have an expectation that you're looking for from them, it sounds like. Can you tell us about what you look for in a good integration for you?
Right. So first of all, it has to be something obviously it has to be something that my customers want, right? So people have to be asking for it, but they also have to have the type of customers that would make good customers for me. Also, they have to be big enough, right? So if I have two products that I can integrate with, and demand is about the same for both of them, I will always go after the one that has a larger customer base or email list, right, first, just because it's going to have a bigger impact on the business for me.
So aside from just doing integrations with some of these other apps, have you done any list swaps that you've been able to arrange some kind of agreement, even though you're not integrated with them?
Yep. Yeah. Those tend to be pretty easy, especially if you're reaching out to people that are about the same size as you. Oh, also for the integration, sometimes it's easier for them to email their list if you give like some sort of discount or something, or, you know, generally I would say, with the last couple that I did, they would, their customers would get 2 free months or something like that. So for cross promotional deals, it's pretty straightforward. Just asking them if they'd be interested in, doing a cross promotional deal and, getting promoted to, you know, however many people on the email list and customer list. And most people, I'm trying to think of if I've ever had anybody say no. Most people will at least be interested enough to talk about it. So, and they'll do it.
About how big was your list when you first kind of did a cross-promotion campaign? Was there a number that it seemed to be beneficial for both parties?
Let's see. It's probably at least a couple of thousand. But I've done deals to where the other side has, you know, like five times as many people on the list. And that's still not been a problem.
Was there any kind of value prop that you needed to present to them?
You know, the way that they've worked really well for me has been through warm introductions. So it all really started with one other. It was actually a blog. It wasn't even a product. So it was a blog, and they had a section to where they sold like ebooks and, you know, designer kits and other stuff like that. So so after I got done with that deal, I asked him if he knew other people that had blogs or anybody else that had an app that was in a similar you know, market that might be interested in doing one of these deals. And so he referred me to I think two people. And I talked to them, did deals, and then basically the same thing, right? After, you know, asked them if they knew people. And it's generally pretty easy doing it that way, because then when you know, you either get an introduction email, or when you email them, you just say, you know, so-and-so recommended I talk to you.
So when you're sending out their product to your list, are you sending it to blog subscribers, customers, both?
Both. So yeah, on both sides, it's generally both. One thing that I used to do early on was trim down my email list. You know, basically get rid of people that weren't opening emails after a while. But they, for some reason, whenever you're talking to somebody about this, they never ask about like how many people actually click through and, you know, go to the page that, you know, that you link to whenever you send out an email, right? Which is the important number. They just want to know how many, they'll say users, because, you know, especially back then, a lot of people just had like a free plan or something like that. So they had a lot of users, but not paying customers. So it's beneficial to have a larger number, right? So I probably shouldn't have been trimming my list just to have a larger number of emails for people to, you know, feel better about it, even though that's not really what they should be asking about.
Interesting. Yeah. One final question here. What is something you would have done differently knowing now after going through the process of launching BidSketch, starting it all over again?
I probably would have talked to customers more in the earlier days. So I did a fair amount of that, but not really enough about the right things, right?
Interesting. So, what would those have been?
Sure. So like the early conversations with customers, especially like during beta or right after I launched, were about more about they were more about like if they had a specific bug or feature, or lightly about how they use the product, right? Mm-hmm. But not really examining like the process before they have to use a product, after they use a product, what caused them to actually sign up in the first place, like what happened, you know, walk me through creating a purpose. So getting deeper into these conversations and really digging into like how they're getting value out of the product.
Interesting.
So I did that a little bit later, but I should have done that earlier.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much. And check out bidsketch.com and check out the blog on bidsketch.com for, you know, more in-depth information.
Thanks, Ruben.
Thanks so much,
Thanks.
Ruben.
Thanks for having me.
Out of my window was the sunset. All the wings, a funny glow. Then my seat started.